Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I'm here with the full complement of the Florida famous Sunshine State Seekers, Chris and Chelsea, Chelsea and Chris, and including Tori, who's joining us for this podcast.
Yeah, so you'll hear a few grunts in the background, and maybe he'll give a few squeaks of approval or disapproval of everything we're talking about, because he's had a few adventures now, you know? He's got opinions on these things.
We hiked Torreya together.
Maybe get well-timed sound effects. This park doesn't have camping.
So today we are talking about Jonathan Dickinson State Park primarily, which is a pretty big state park in Hobbs Sound area of Florida. Kind of what's on the east coast of, it's almost what, halfway?
Yes, by Jupiter.
Yeah, Jupiter.
Down in southeast Florida, I suppose.
Yeah. It's been a couple of years since I've been there. I enjoy it. For the location, it's pretty large. It's 11,500 acres in an area that's in pretty high demand for real estate. But that wasn't so back then. By comparison, if you look at the largest park, Fakahatchee Strand, at 85,000 acres, and the smallest, which is Fernandina Plaza, at 0.8 acres, it's up there. But it also has 16 different habitats. Primarily, it's scrub. Was there a sand hill there, do you think?
Well, see, I always thought it was scrub because that's what you see from the road.
Yeah.
And I actually found out because we talked to a ranger this last weekend. That,
and you hiked quite a bit of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually primarily pine flatwoods.
Really?
So the scrub is very noticeable from the road. And it's a beautiful, pristine scrub habitat. But as it drops into the floodplain for the Loxahatchee River, it's miles and miles of pine flatwoods.
Okay.
Wet flatwoods, too.
And when you actually get into the park and you're driving around and going to the campgrounds, you see a lot of the pine flatwoods.
I was surprised because we'd never gone to the back of the park until this last visit.
Much like you, when we were doing our original stamp collection, we got our stamp, went in, looked around, and then went off to the next location. But this time we got to spend a number of days there.
Yeah, so that's nice. That's good. It's a very interesting park. I spent some time there. Primarily, I checked out Hobe Mountain and the Loxahatchee, did a little walking around, and that was it.
I would say Hobe Mountain's probably what most people would know it for, especially because you can see it right from the road when you're driving past. What road is that? Do you know?
I think it's A1A. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And so you drive past and you see it right up there, and it's very popular during sunset, possibly sunrise too. I
don't know. Yeah. Hobe Mountain is a very tall sand dune. It's, what is it? 86 feet or somewhere around there?
It was in the 80s. And then the tower itself at the top is another 27 feet, I believe, for like a total of 113.
Yeah. There was a small parking lot, a boardwalk that takes you up, and then you climb the tower and you get some fantastic views of the surrounding area. There's another dune that's very large. I thought that was the largest, but I've been to the Nana Dune on Amelia Island. But that one, you just can't get up to it. You can't walk around it or anything. It's protected, but you can just stare at it.
From below.
Yeah, but the mount.
Pooey, he wants to go on that.
Gazoo type.
But
it's nothing to sneeze at, Tori.
The one in Jonathan Dissey.
It's a big dune. Come on. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. But that one offers much better, I guess, recreational opportunities and views. But there's all kinds of things to do. There's camping. Is that correct?
Yes. So we stayed in the back campground. What was that one called?
River camp.
River camp. That seemed to be primarily tents. There were a few RVs, but mostly tents back there. And then there's the front campground.
Pine Grove.
Which is called Pine Grove. And that was primarily RVs, but they are in the process of constructing some, what I assume is going to be marketed as glamping tents. Okay. They don't look like the other glamping tents you've seen at other sites. They're more like the square cabin, almost like a pop-up CCC tent.
It's made out of canvas.
Made out of canvas, more rectangular. But they're putting wood floors in all of them. It looks like it was going to be pretty nice once those open up. I did see one tent in that area, so it's not exclusive to RVs.
There was much less shade available there. But there was notably, I think perhaps a better name for the campground would be like the Seagrave campground.
Yeah, surrounded. Each campsite was surrounded by like a hedge. A tall hedge
sea grape trees.
But like Chris had said, not enough to give you much cover from the very intense sun of the area. When we went, it was quite brisk during the day. But even when the air temperature was cool, that sun just beat down on you. So having a bit of shade was very welcome. We went with Tori, so there was a bit of the day where even our campsite that had trees around it was getting a little much. So I opened the hatch of our car and set his little sleeper under it just so he had some shade.
Oh, yeah. Smart thinking. My goodness. So they got the camping. They got cabins. I believe they have a few cabins.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, that park, you can do what, horseback riding, mountain biking, lots of hiking, swimming along the Loxahatchee. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to do. I haven't done all of it.
Which I don't know how much swimming in the Loxahatchee I'm going to do, but you can. Go right ahead.
Some of the parks have these swimming areas where you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe if I lived there or maybe if I had a few redneck friends to jump in the water before me. Kidding.
Make sure the coast is clear.
Yeah. And I think there's some primitive camping there too, but we didn't really check those sites out.
One of the things that make it very interesting is Trapper Nelson, he bought a lot of property. I think 800 acres there, maybe in the 1920s. I'm not sure when he acquired it. I think it was 1920s, maybe 1930s time frame. And then during the Great Depression was just buying more and more land as it was going up for tax sales. And then ended up opening his own zoo. And he was like, he's known as like the Tarzan of the Loxahatchee, or your Trapper Nelson. He did a lot of trapping, dealing with wild animals, had like with wrestling alligators. I mean, I guess he had a very large appetite. Some friends said that he would come to a restaurant and order an entire pie and eat the whole thing.
Was it eating like 18 eggs or something like that?
Yeah. And I can eat, but man, that's stretching it for me. He had this zoo that is like, I guess tour boat operators would come up and would bring people over to a zoo. That was a primary source of income. And after a few decades, the health department, I guess, got a little bit more involved. They ended up shutting it down for unsanitary conditions. I think it had to do something with maybe a lack of or the condition of the bathrooms.
Mm. I think there were no bathrooms.
Okay.
That could be.
You know, and when there's no bathrooms and people need a bathroom, they make a bathroom. So could be an issue.
Imagine a whole tour boat full of people too. So I guess he made some adjustments. They still decided that it wasn't good enough. So they shut down the zoo. He did not take kindly to that. Evidently had a distrust of the government and became a recluse out there. He had a death under mysterious circumstances as well, didn't he?
I think that's some of the mystery that kind of wraps up his whole interesting life.
You know.
It was ruled a suicide, but it basically was a shotgun wound to the abdomen or chest, depending on where you read it.
Tough way to go.
The government pretty much, the coroner and everyone else, the sheriff said, it was suicide, but there's been rumors ever since.
There was also a long-standing rumor about his treasure. I think he died around, 1960? So there's this treasure that he had buried out there, which after reading about some eccentrics that have lived in kind of the wilds of Florida, that is a very common theme. I've heard of a few other treasures, but they actually found some of his, I believe, in the chimney of his cabin, maybe behind some bricks or something, but it was a lot of coins.
Is it a squirrel nut collection?
worth a little bit below $1,900. I don't know how much it would have been back then, adjusted for
inflation.
Yeah. But now the site is actually within the park boundary itself, mm-hmm. and I think it was open Thursday through, or Monday through Thursday, but from like 8 o'clock to 4:30 or something like that, or 9:30 to 4:30.
It's something where you have to have boat travel to get to it, right?
Yeah, there's like a little ferry boat kind of that takes you out to that, and it views other areas as well, correct? Not sure.
Yeah, you have to have a private charter bring you up there. But I do, it did seem like it was accessible by kayak too. I saw that there's a chain link fence that they close for the property when it is closed, but mm-hmm. when it is open, it looks like that fence is open. So
yeah, I definitely want to check it out. It's something that I plan on doing sooner or later. I guess it's one of those things that if it's along the coast like it is, I do it sooner because it's one hurricane away from.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, we just in our few years. I mean, a lot of us have been here our whole lives or most of our lives, and just in the last few years, we've seen how dramatic the coastline can change from our ever increasing storm strengths that we're getting,
especially the coastal parks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, shortly after he died, an arsonist came and like burned down one of his buildings and tried to burn the others. How far is it from y'all's house?
About 2.5 hours.
Oh, really?
I believe was the drive.
To the south.
Yeah. To the south. And one of the things I could say that was cool to view there that we've mentioned in many podcasts, but I don't think you were expecting to see them on this trip were the scrub jays.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize how prominent they were in this park as well. But so I hiked the White Trail, which was fairly long. I think it was almost 9 miles, and it encompasses a tiny part of the, and that's something to mention too, the Ocean Lake hiking trail managed by the Florida Trail, the Loxahatchee chapter,
mm-hmm.
that runs through the park. So, and that goes from Lake Okeechobee to Hope Sound.
Yep. So they call it ocean to lake. Typically, it's traveled lake to ocean. Mm-hmm. But
that white really trail is
fun section.
It is. We've yet to
do the whole thing. We've done a lot of bits of it. What it's been described to us as is a condensed version of the entire Florida Trail. You can get a little bit of swamp, a little bit of coast, a little bit of scrub and flatwoods. Like you said, this one park has many different habitats in it. So just the whole Ocean Lake Trail, from what it's been described to us, is a condensed version of the Florida National Scenic Trail.
Yeah. And that white trail that I did, so it used a little bit of that mm-hmm. Ocean Lake Trail, but it's there's a white trail and a green trail that are both managed or they're maintained by the Florida Trail Association. But the white one is where I really saw the scrub jays.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically a long oval that starts at the Camp Murphy Trailhead, mm-hmm. which used to be part of the military establishments there. You're going along these ancient sand dunes. You hear that trademark screech that they do. And one of them flew like 4 feet up to me and just was checking me out. And that was a cool experience.
So that is touching. That's kind of Disney. The one I get is when the Sentinels come out there and at Ocala National Forest and squawk 6 feet away constantly till I keep
warning moving. Everybody else to stay out of here. There's a big man coming.
This clod walking through our habitat. Did you say there was some pine flatwoods, which I love hiking pine flatwoods. So from some of you that may not be as familiar with the Florida habitats, Florida has a lot of sand. And Sand Hill, where I hike probably the most, is usually very dry and sandy. It uses, you'll see some, you know, pine trees, maybe some turkey oaks, gopher tortoises, and wiregrass. But Flatwoods is a little bit lower and has more water. And sometimes, if you're really lucky, that moisture adds like a carpet of grass and vegetation just on the trail to walk on. If you have the ones that do not have a lot of traffic.
Yeah, so we were lucky enough that the water level was just high enough to be shin deep.
Sloshing through. That was the Kitchen Creek Trail, yes. Which is by the visitor center.
And Chelsea, I know you just hated that, didn't you?
Oh, it was funny because my kids were like, let's turn around. And Chris is like, you know, you guys can turn around. Now I was like, no, we're not. Get in this water. And my oldest was like, she complained a little. My youngest daughter, she does not mind the wet trails at all. So she was pretty excited. Now, I believe some of her love of the wet trails is more to aggravate her older sister. So, yeah, you don't like this. Look, I'm cool. I love it. And if I'm going, guess what? You have to go too. Ha ha. So a little more of that. But we had a great time. Once I always say it's ripping off the Band-Aid. Once you get in the water, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. That sibling dynamic, recreating in Florida trails when I was a kid, that always had a role to play, depending on how we enjoyed it. There was that one, was it the nature trail that was north of here, and it was in the state forest, but it was like walking on a nice carpet. Do you remember what I'm talking about? It was part of the Trail Walker program. It was a short one, maybe a mile or two.
I've seen plenty of trails like that, though. Like in the grass, like you said, it just resembles a carpet.
It's that like thinner interwoven, almost like a rug.
Yeah, maybe it was in Bethia or something, but it was like this nature trail, and it was awesome. They had a lot of bladderwort. You said, I remember mm-hmm. telling me. But
and it's typical scenery in these pine flatwoods, especially the ones that get pretty wet.
Yeah, Payne's Prairie has some pine flatwoods. I hiked through those, but I could just tell that trail didn't get a lot of traffic, well, compared to like the right. prairie.
Another thing to mention about this park was their cool visitor center.
Oh yeah,
that we went through, had all kinds of different animal enclosures, and they had it all. They were just starting to decorate it for Halloween. There was this one snake enclosure, I believe it had a yellow rat snake in it that was attacking the plastic skull that they put into the cage for decoration. It was like headbutting it. It was really weird. It did not.
Trying to figure out how to open it and crawl inside or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I think that it was really looking for a cavity to crawl into, but unfortunately the plastic skull was completely enclosed. But it was kind of funny to watch. And they have the Junior Ranger like set up there. So if you have little ones that want a more age-appropriate education opportunity, you can take them over there. And they have ways to describe the habitats and the environment to the little ones.
It was one of the most impressive visitor centers that mm-hmm. I've seen at a state park.
Yeah.
It's pretty big. And it was right by the campground that we stayed at the end. Yeah. By the river.
And we also saw a wedding while we were there.
Yeah.
So
it looked like it's pretty popular for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the theme for the, maybe it's a fall thing because we saw a wedding this last weekend at a Goldhead.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. I don't want to do it. If you want to have an unpopular wedding, doing it in July at noon.
You know, that might be good for those trying to keep numbers down. Yeah.
We got to cut the guest list. Okay.
Sure. You're all invited.
Everybody.
So how did the camping stack up against other state parks?
The state parks in general, I think, are just the maintenance on them and everything is
yeah,
is
usually the
high
restrooms
quality.
Are maintained, and you got the showers typically. We use the washer and dryer, which are a nice $5 per load.
Really?
Yeah. But that park does have a coin machine at the ranger station, which I found out after probably an hour and a half of touring the area trying to get stores to give me quarters.
Are you looking under the floor mats and stuff?
I remember going to one store and they're like, well, we'll give you $1.50 in quarter or $2 in quarters. And went to another store, we'll give you $1 in quarters. And so I finally left there with $3 in quarters. I'm like, well, at least get to wash the clothes. So I'll hang dry them. And then getting back in there, because I've gone to quite a few state parks that do not have coin machines. And when I get back there, I go, do you guys know anywhere else I can get quarters? Like, yeah, right here. Going right inside. Come on in. I was like, I should have. Yeah, I had other errands I was running too, so it wasn't a complete waste of time, but
yeah,
that one does
good.
Have a coin machine.
as is typical, the sites can range greatly. A lot of them, I mean, some of them can be like fishbowl
yeah.
type, and then you get lucky and you get one of the more enclosed ones.
And when we went, there was a large Boy Scout troop gathering. So.
Yeah, it was wild when we got there. There's people everywhere. And then we stayed because the kids were out of school on a Monday for a teacher work day, which that varies across the state too. So obviously the kids down there had to go back to school on Monday. And this campground that was full of people for the first night.
Yeah. Just pretty much emptied out.
We were like the only people there
really?
on Monday morning.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was a few campers that started their adventures on Monday. There's a handful of people that came back. And set up their stuff when we were still there, but it was largely empty. Now, in contrast, the other campsite, what was it called again? Pine Grove?
Yeah.
Was completely full. So,
really?
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Yeah. Ours had emptied out, and that one, everyone was still there. And maybe that's more retirees, RV campers. Like I said, that one seemed to be more popular with the RVs.
It's right inside the park, too, so yeah. it's convenient, I would imagine, for people who wanted to come and go from the park. And it does have a much more beachy feel
yeah.
to it.
It's a definitely more, I don't know, unique to the area, where there's a number of campsites throughout the state and Pine Flatwoods, where that one's got the sea grapes.
Well, one thing that was really cool actually about the river campsite was there was like a small little trail that kind of ran along the back of the campsite,
mm-hmm.
and it really does back up to the Loxahatchee floodplain. And as you're walking along this trail, which was maybe 100 or so feet from our campsite, there were mangroves.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Right there, because it's connected to the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, mangoes are important, and they're pretty cool. And they stop at a certain point in Florida, because we don't have them up here. I enjoy the mangroves. Did you guys see a lot of mountain bikers out there?
Yeah, I was going to bring it up. That's probably what this park is most known for. When we had first visited the park, we stopped by a brewery on the way there. And the brewmaster, the bartender, or whoever behind the bar, seemed to know a lot about the park. And he was just telling us how it was known for mountain biking.
Huh.
And that's how he recreated there. And he really filled us in on different details about the park. It was really nice to meet people in the area who recreated there, because sometimes that doesn't happen. You know, when mm-hmm. you move somewhere, you're at home, you're doing your job, and then you go other places to recreate. But it seemed like a lot of people in the area really use it. And when we got there this time, there was a line of bikes entering the ranger station, okay. where you usually see a line of cars. Luckily for us, when we went to that brewery, we had left our passport behind,
ooh.
Which we had already had quite a number of stamps in there. And Chris momentarily freaked out. And I go, let's just call them. So he called me. He's like, yeah, your passport's here. I'll hold on to it for you. We turned around, went and picked it up. I think we had already left. Or maybe we had gone to the park and realized we didn't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had to go back and get our stamp. Because our idea was, we stopped in there. It was the Tequesta Brewing Company.
Yeah.
And stopped in there, and then we were going to go to Jonathan Dickinson, and we go to get our passport book stamped, and where is the passport book?
I would have been in full-blown panic mode.
Yeah. So Ryan actually got some new passports recently, and in the front is a nice little section that says, please return to, and has a little spot to fill out that information, which I don't believe our passport had that.
It did as soon as I had it back in my hands. It had our name and phone number, and written down in the front right away.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, this park does a great job of appealing to a large number of activities. Because some parks, say like beach parks, they're just, you know, it's primarily the beach, or like it's Chukni, it's the springs and whatnot. But some parks really can appeal to a large group of people,
mm-hmm.
or people that have various interests and activities. And this one did that. I loved the park drive. Like I said, I want to spend more time there when I go back, but I just enjoyed the condition that they maintained the woods. I saw, you know, a little bit of scrub, maybe some pine flat woods there that were just in great condition because of park staff does a great job maintaining them.
And one thing to point out about the park drive, which should be, you know, evident and should be followed at every park you go to, but definitely follow the speed limit there. You're sharing the road with lots of bikers, lots of other kinds of recreators too. I saw some skateboarders. Some guy was jogging with a group of bikers. I joked that like someone must have stolen his bike.
That's all right, guys. I'll just run alongside you.
And also lots of gopher tortoises, lots of animals sharing those roads with you as well. When I was driving along looking at the various sites, there was a car that did pass me that maybe wasn't going that much over the speed limit, but was enough for it to be somewhat startling.
Yeah.
So just watch your speed there. You're sharing the roads with people and wildlife.
Yes, yes. That's exactly it.
And to add to this long list of recreational opportunities, I don't think we mentioned backpacking.
Oh, yeah.
And because the Ocean Lake hiking trail is back there, there's actually two primitive campsites in the back of the park that you have to take. You can get to from the Kitchen Creek Trail, taking some unmarked trails, and you can reserve those with the park itself as a primitive campsite. And I would say the closest one is probably a 6-7 mile round trip, so it's a good backpacking overnight experience.
Yeah, we actually often get people asking us what's a good one to start. So I often say a good one, especially if you're worried about, you know, just people, other people's access to where you're camping within the state parks is always a good place to start, because you get out there, but you're not so far removed and in the middle of the woods to where if you needed help, no one would be coming. I always recommend the state parks for starting backpacking.
They're secure, and depending on which park it is, I mean, you're going to have a ranger who's going to know exactly where you are. That can drive out to you should anything happen.
Yes. Some of your larger preserves, that may be a bit of a challenge, but unlike state forests, what isn't like self-reliance or something is in the one, is in their slogan, so you know you're going to be out there.
Especially for places like Ocala National Forest, they're just like, this is enter at your own risk. And in some places, I believe the wilderness area, they're even limited on how they will proceed to rescue you if something is going down, because you entered that knowing what you were getting into.
Yeah.
One of the other things I like as a history fan is Camp Murphy was there. So that was like a World War II base, a radar training school, part of the Signal Corps. Back then, that was like top, top secret. So think about possibly like, you know, Space Force stuff, or, you know, it was really cutting edge. But the base, like many military installations around that time, was only open a few years, and they closed, I think, before the end of World War II. And then 2 years after World War II ended, they handed everything over to the state.
There's actually a nice kiosk that goes into the military history right next to Hope Mountain. And they talk about the different buildings that used to be there. There was a bowling alley, all kinds of different things for the servicemen to recreate while they were serving there.
There are tons of remnants, especially along the shorter green blazed loop trail.
Yeah. If you kind of like that urban kind of remains, or, you know, seeing the old stuff, Atlas Obscura kind of stuff, that's things to look at there that I thought were pretty interesting. And also, what I was surprised to hear is on that base, Trapper Nelson, he got drafted during World War II, and he was an MP there.
Huh.
So he got to be pretty close to home, which I think is a good thing. Very fortunate if that's what you want to do.
There's also a lot of roads of, I guess, state park past there that are in various states of disarray. Chris was hiking, and I was driving the girls around just viewing everything in the area. And we got to Hope Mountain to just look at it one more time before we left. And I drove past it and kept going in. And I was like, man, where am I? These roads are not taken care of at all. And all the kind of like cracks and grass growing out of everything. And I realized someone had left a gate open, and that on that gate it said, service road only, don't come back here. And I didn't realize until I got to the other side and there was a closed gate, and I'm like, I am shut in here. This is a ranger area. And I turned around, and
it appeared to be an old entrance. Cause as it wound back towards A1A, there was a like a little island where a ranger station
would have been.
Yeah, that's not surprising. I don't know anything particularly about that, but yeah. We were at Goldhead, and I saw an old service road I used to walk on, and they closed it off, and it had been overgrown. You couldn't even tell it was there anymore. But, well, that about does it. Yeah, if you're in, lower central Florida along the coast, I guess Jupiter area, this is a great park to check out. Tons to do, and you can definitely make a day of it, or if you're camping, a few days.
Yeah.
So it has history, different habitats, endangered Florida species, and all kinds of stuff. As always, thanks for listening, and enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.